And we're holding on Kuflamud Beis Amud Beis, the second line from the bottom. We've been discussing the last couple of blocks the various details about when a person wants to give his nechosim. Well, actually, during the, over the last block, we've talked about specifically the case where a person says that he's giving his wife a matana, or he's giving his wife some or all of the Yerusha, and the question is, So we had earlier, there was a question whether he's making her an apotropa, but now we have where he's giving her a gift, and it's definitely chal as a gift. The question is now, does that mean that she's forfeited her shibud on the ksuba, her shibud for the ksuba on all the nechasim up until that point, or is she not moichel on it, and she can still collect from the things that he gave to other people as well? So the Gemara says, Ahuda Omalahu, there was a person who said before he died, Tilta Libras, one third of my nechosim, he only had daughters, he had a wife, and he had daughters, he didn't have any sons. So he says, one third of my nechosim should go to one daughter, the Tilta Libras, and another third to my other daughter, the Tilta Leitas, and one third to my wife. Now, so far, that would be, that we talked about yesterday, that he made his wife equal to one of the Yerushim, and then, therefore, that would mean that that would be Ibda Ksubasa, like we talked about yesterday, that she's lost her shibud on the Ksuba, for the Ksuba on the Nechosin that he gave to the two girls, because now she received one-third, and if that pays off her Ksuba, then good, and if not, then... And if not, then in any case, she's moichel on her shibud, unless he gets other nechosim afterwards. If he gets other nechosim later on, then she'd collect from those. As it is, now with a shchiv merab, we talked about yesterday that, you could say by shchiv merab, she knows for a fact he's hardly likely to get more nechosim between now and when he dies. So if she's willing to accept that terms and not protest, then she's meichel, maybe by a bori not. So Rava had left it as a teiku, the Gemara had left it as a teiku. So now we're saying, in any case, our case over here is more clearly about is about a shchiv merah. So for sure the din would apply then that she was meichel. The twist is over here.
Would it change if it's a boy or a girl we're talking over here, Matt?
No, it so happens that it was girls over here, but Pasha, so it doesn't make a difference. The twist is, while he was alive, one of his daughters passed away, and he yashined her because she didn't have any children of her own. So now let's consider. Well, the reason why we said yesterday that if he's giving part of the Yerusha to his wife, then she's moichel on the shibud of her ksuba, is because we're saying that either if he's a shchiv merah, we're saying she figures he's not likely to get new nechosim between now and then, so therefore, but if I'm willing to accept it, it means that I'm moichel. If he's a bari, we said maybe not, because maybe she has every right to assume that he is going to get other nechosim. Here, the twist is, he did get other nechosim, but it was from the very own nechosim that used to belong to him that he gave to this one daughter who passed away. So, sovereign a popular memela shakla el tilja. Rav Kafi thought to say that still the wife can collect her ksuba, or she can collect in general, only the one-third that he gave her. As far as the one-third that he had given his daughter, and then he had inherited back from his daughter, Rav Kafi thought to say, look, after all, this is nechosin that he now newly acquired. Or the other way around, the Papi thinks to say that no, since this was originally the property of the husband, and yes, he gave it away, but now he got it back. But still, at the time he gave it away, she was moichel her shibud on it, and now she can't reassert a shibud over it just because the husband has it back. That's what the Papi thought to say. Omalei Rav Kahana, but Rav Kahana says that's not so. Ilu hodor kani, after all, if this husband had bought other nechosim that hadn't been his in the first place, milei shakla, wouldn't she have every right to take her ksuba from those? Yes, of course she was moichel on her shibud of the nechosim he had so far, but there's no question if he bought new nechosim, she hasn't given up her shibud on those. The kiven de ilu hodokoni shakla, then therefore, since if he were to get new nechosim from elsewhere, she would definitely get from those, because he writes in the ksuba that whatever property I have now and whatever property I'm going to buy in the future is all meshubad to you. So now also hashnami shakla. So even so, yes, it was from the same nechosim that he had originally, but what's the difference? And either way, the point is that she was willing to be moichel on her shibud, but she wasn't. She wasn't moichel to her husband. She still has every right to collect from her husband. And since her husband ended up re-yashining this property, then therefore, if Kahana says, then she should be entitled to collect from that. So not only she has the one third that he gave her as a Yerusha, but she's entitled to exercise her shibud for the ksuba on the one third that he inherited back from his daughter. Rapapi had had a different svara. He said he figured that no, she was completely moichel her schus on it. It wasn't, she didn't think it was hardly likely that it was going to come back to his rishus. So says the Ritva. Nevertheless, Rav Kahana says it doesn't make a difference. The fact is, it wasn't in his rishus, and now it came. So therefore, it's the equivalent of other property that he bought, and that's the halacha.
The halacha is that
in this case she would be entitled to get from that part that he had given to one of his daughters, which then the daughter died and he yashined it back from her.
But she was moichel.
She was moichel, but the mechila doesn't go on the property itself. The mechila is that the mechila was not relative to her husband. She wasn't moichel anything to her husband. So now that her husband reacquired that property, then fine, she wasn't moichel anything to him, and therefore she's still entitled to collect from it.
But she was not moichel to him, but moichel to the ksuba.
She was moichel her shibud on this property, but she wasn't moichel the fact that he has a responsibility to pay her ksuba, or that his yershim have the right to have the responsibility to pay her ksuba, as the case may be. So now that there's no question, says Rav Kahana, if he had gotten other property that never belonged to him before, she wasn't moichel her shibud on that. So the same way over here, yes, it happens to be that this property at one point he owned and was included in the shibud, but now that he has it back, it's not included in the shibud anymore. I mean, it is included in the shibud, rather. It is included in the shibud. It's not included in the mechila, is what I meant to say, and therefore she has every right to collect from it. Another case, Ahud Pauginu Lenichse, there was a person who divided up his nechosim, he divided up his nechosim among his wife and his children. So he gave a portion to his wife, he gave a portion to his children, Shir Chad Dikla, but he left over one palm tree that he hadn't divided. He didn't say who's going to get it. Suffered a vinyl amemer. So Ravina thought to say, in that case, as far as collecting the rest of her ksuba, all she's going to be able to collect from is that one tree. If he hadn't left anything behind, then again we said he made her a shuta feina bonim. He made her, in effect, like a partner equal to his children, because he gave her a portion and gave them a portion. And we've been saying throughout the sugya that she lost her shibud, therefore, that she's been moichel her shibud on the nechosim that he had up until that point for the ksuba. So now also, therefore, so the sons get our zoicha irrevocably in what they have, and she can't take from them. As far as what's she going to collect her ksuba from, the only asset that's available is the palm tree. That's what Ravina thought to say. Omale Rav Yemer le Ravina, but Rav Yemer says to Ravina, it's not so. Ilesla chad dikla. If she doesn't have the, if you're going to say that she doesn't have any, that she doesn't get any nechosim, for, if she can't get rather from the children's part because she was moichel on it, chad dikla nami lesla, then you're going to have to say that she doesn't get anything from that one tree as well. In effect, she would have been moichel her shibud on that one as well. Because we would say, what's the difference? In other words, Rav Yemer is saying whether you have the part that he outright gave the children or whether the part that he didn't divide up, namely the palm tree. So if you're going to say that she doesn't get from the children, then there's no reason she would get from the tree either. Ella, Migur de Nachsa Ladikla. Rather, we have to say the other way around. She is entitled to get from the palm tree because that she wasn't moichel. She wasn't moichel completely because he left her this tree to take from it. So once she has that, then she is in fact able to go into the other nechasim and collect from the children. Aye, then why was she quiet? It's one thing, in other words, if he had given out all his nechasim and not left anything, everything went to either her or the children and there was nothing left over, then you could say she didn't want to say anything because then she figures he's going to get nechasim later on or something like we learned before. But now that he left over a palm tree, so why didn't she protest at the time? Because she figured, you know what, why should I borrow trouble. Let me figure out. Beis Din will figure out how much the palm tree is worth. Then I'll collect that for sure for my ksuva. And then once I'm at that, then I'll also go to the children and get the rest from them. So in other words, where he didn't leave anything behind, then you would say, you would have the question that Rava brought up before, whether by a body we would say she was completely moichel, because we're saying she has says there's a very high likelihood he's going to get more nechosim later in life, as opposed to a shivra. But here he left over. So we're saying that you could say by a body she didn't say anything because she's not meaning to be moida. She's just thinking to herself, you know what? Later on we'll see what happens. By the time he's going to live many more years. By the time he dies, we'll see if he has enough nechasim. Then I have no reason to take the whole matter to Beis Din anyway. So the same thing over here. When there is one palm tree, she certainly wasn't moichel on that. And now because she may figure, you know what? Let's see what happens. Maybe that palm tree will be enough to pay off my ksuva. So therefore, that doesn't mean that she was necessarily moichel the rest of the property that went to the other children. The Rashbam goes on to describe that again, all these dinim we've been talking about throughout the sugya about who is giving out everything to everybody else, and he gives her kauf a kol shehu. So we said that she's moichel on the shibud of everything else, and we said it can be when it's in her presence or when she was involved in the kinyan, etc. The whole discussion that we had yesterday. Only when he's giving out all his nechasim. But if he leaves over something that he didn't, as we see from our Gemara over here, if he leaves over something that he didn't give out, then in fact it means she wasn't completely moichel, she wasn't moichel at all on her shibud, and therefore she has a right to collect from that little amount that he left over. And once she does that, when we're talking about karka, that is, and then she has the rights to go and collect from anything else because she wasn't moichel on anything, provided that Ashbam goes on to say, provided that it was that he left her karka. If he left her only metaltlin, then anyway, we would say that's not even called shutaf bein abonim, as we learned at the end of the Gemara yesterday, metaltlin is a different thing than karka in that regard. If he only leaves her metaltlin, for sure she's not moichel on anything. And then again, if he gets other nechasim, then she has a right to collect from them as well. So in short, in other words, the Rashbam says, when do we say that she was moichel hushibur only if? So first of all, we left as a teiku in the Gemara yesterday whether any of these dinim would apply when he's a bari, or do all these dinim apply only when he's a shchivmara, and we left that at teiku. Rashbam says the result of that teiku is hamotzi mechavel raya. She would have to be the one who brings the raya if she wants to collect. Other rishonim learn maybe the other way around. Maybe she's considered the muchzak because she has a ksuba. In any case, that's in the case of a bari. In the case of a shchivmara, we make the following distinction. If he gave out all the nechasim and gave her some, so then we said she's moichel her. So we said if he gives her a shutaf bein abonim, he makes her a partner among the children, then ibda ksubasa, then she loses her rights to collect for her ksuba from the other nechasim. But other than that, and we said also it doesn't have to be that he made her shutaf bein avonim. Even if he gave her only, for example, one tree, then also ibduk subasa. So it has to be, in other words, but it has to be that he gave out all the nechasim. If there's anything he didn't give out, she obviously wasn't moichel her shibud on that. Therefore, she's not moichel her shibud on anything. That's the summary of what the Rashbam says right here. So in this case, in other words, Rav Yehuda says she is entitled to collect from that one tree, and therefore she is entitled to collect from the rest of the nechasim as well that he gave to his children. Okay. So all of this was a little bit of a digression, really. All of this that we discussed in the last blot and a half or so was a little bit of a digression. We had talked about whether the din that Rabbi Yochanan and Breuka had said in our Mishnah that a man is able to disinherit some of his children in favor of others. We said that that applies to a Shivmana, and the Gemara had brought up the question, would it apply to a Bori as well? And we had the whole discussion between Rav Nosson and Rebbe about that, and we had a whole sugya in the Gemara about that. So that had led us into a couple of other cases where we say a certain din applies to a Shivmana, and the question is if it applies to a Bori as well. So now, let's get back to discussing Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka's opinion that a person is able to disinherit his children in favor of others. In favor of other children, as we said, Lamaskana Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka holds. But that's what he does at Meloshin Yerusha, and again, Meloshin Matana, he can do whatever he wants. So the Gemara says, Omer Rav Huna, Shchiv Mera Shekosav Kol Nechosav La'achar. If a Shchiv Mera writes out that all of his nechosim are going to go to somebody else. Now, maybe this din applies to a bori as well, as we learned back on Daf Kuf Lamed Aleph, where the Gemara had brought up that discussion. But in any case, definitely the din that we're talking about over here, no question that it applies to a shchiv mera. So that's, which is why the Gemara is saying it this way. So a shchiv mera, shekosav kol nechosav la'achar, where he writes out a document that all his nechosim should go to somebody else. Now, he didn't specify a loshen of matana or a loshen of yerusha. So royin, says Rav Huna, we have to look at the situation. Im roi l'yoshay, if that other person is roi to yarshin him. So again, for example, it would be ben habonim, that for example, it's one of his children that he chooses to give all of his nachla to and to disinherit the other ones. Or he has only daughters and there's one daughter among all the other daughters. So then we say, noitron mishum yerusha. Then he's entitled to collect that property on the grounds of yerusha. Which the Gemara is going to explain further down on the onward, what the nafkamina is, whether we call it a yerusha or a nachla. The imlav, and if not, let's say, for example, it was a daughter instead of sons, or brothers instead of the daughter, or whatever, noitan mishum matana, then Rav Huna says he still gets them, but by virtue of matana. Because we say a concept called ein adam motzi dvarav levatala. A person is not going to just speak uselessly. When he wants to give to this person, says Rav Huna, one way or the other, he wants it to take effect. But according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka, when it's a situation where according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka, he's able to give it on the grounds of Yerusha, namely it's one son among his other sons, or one daughter among his other daughters, or whatever, then we're going to say it's considered a Yerusha. If not, then the other person still gets it, but they can't get it as a Yerusha, because even Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka is not going to say that that's considered, that he can give it, that he can override the dinim of the Torah of Yerusha, but rather the other person can get it as a matana. Omele Rav Nachman, so Rav Nachman says to Rav Huna, Ganva Gnuvi Lomoloch. What are you trying to sneak in over here, and saying like this, we have to see whether Roy Yosha or not. Is Viraloch Rav Yochanan ben Breuka, Ema Halacha Rav Yochanan ben Breuka. If you hold like Rav Yochanan ben Breuka, then just say straight out the Halacha is like him, and therefore, that it's possible for a person to that extent to override the dinim of Yerusha, to give to one son among the other sons, etc. Because the fact is, what you're saying works only according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka. According to the Chachamim, there's no way to make it work. Because how could you say that if he's royally Yerusha, he gets it as a Yerusha? According to the Chachamim, as in previous Mishnayos, you're not able to b'chlal change anything about the Yerusha to take away the Yerusha from any one child in favor of another one. So why not just say straight out the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Breuka? So he continues. He says, you know what? Maybe actually, Rav Nachman continues to Rav Huna, Dilma Kihoka Amr. Maybe when you're saying your din that he gets it because of Yerusha or Matana, as the case may be, maybe what you mean to say is as follows. Maybe the reason why you're saying it like that, rather than saying straight out that the halacha is like a Yochanan, maybe because there was actually a case that you dealt with where it happened like this, and therefore you're saying what the din would be in that particular case without really, I mean, yes, the din you're going to say is based on Rabbi Yochanan Broika, but you're saying that there was a particular case that happened, something like that. Namely, there was a person who passed away, but so people asked him before he died, where are you, who are you nechosim going to go to? Do you maybe want to give them to Pliny? The omel who elolaman, and he says, sure, he says, well, yeah, who else? So now, in other words, so he's saying that, yes, I intend to give my nechosim to Pliny. But he didn't specify Yerusha or Matana. The Amrit Lonala, now you, Rav Huna, explained to us that in that situation, She'im Roy Liyosha Noitlan Mashum Yerusha, V'im Lav Noitlan Mashum Matana, that if that person is capable of Yarshining him, again, it's one son among the other sons, or one daughter among the other daughters, then they get it as a Yerusha, and if not, then he gets it as a Matana. So maybe you're not telling us, maybe you're not mainly, says Rav Nachman to Rav Huna, you're not coming to tell us that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika. You're just addressing an actual case that happened where a person just says, Stam, I want Pliny to get this property without specifying Matana or Yerusha, then we're going to say that, by default, we should consider it a Yerusha, and if it's impossible, then it becomes a Matana. And you want to say, in other words, that there is a difference in that regard, what the difference is going to be, and then the Gemara is going to discuss in the next line. So maybe you're not mainly coming to tell us the halacha is like a birchim and broika, because then the genuvi genuva lamalach, where he's sneaking it in, but rather you're talking about an actual case that happened, and incidentally you're mentioning the halacha is like a birchim and broika, but mainly you want to focus on the point that there is a difference between matana and yerusha, and therefore that you want to stress that here it should be considered a yerusha when possible, and if not, then a matana. Rav Huna says, Ein hochi kamina. Yes, indeed, that is what I'm saying. That we should prefer to consider it a Yerusha when possible, which will have naftaminas, as the Gemara is going to talk about soon. But if we can't, then we consider it a matana. This is, by the way, a point of the Rashbam. The Geonim bring, and ultimately the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch agree with this, that no, actually, even if he says a Loshan Matana, if the person is capable of Yarshining him, then we reinterpret that Matana as a Yerusha. So in other words, if he were to say, given that the halacha is like Rabbi Yochanan ben Breika, if he were to say among one of his children, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, etc., let's say to keep things simple, none of them are b'chor, because let's say he had girls first or whatever, he had children who died first, whatever. Anyway, the point is, if he were to say, for example, I want all my nechasim to be given as a gift to Reuven, well, since Reuven is capable of Yarshining him because he's one of his sons, then we would reinterpret that matana as a Yerusha. Only if the Reuven that he wants to give it to is somebody else, a daughter or a brother or a stranger or whatever, then we're going to have no choice but to interpret it as a matana.
But if you're interpreting it as a Yerusha, it's only him who gets it, right?
Well, so we're going to see soon in the Gemara what the nafkamina is, or what one nafkamina is, whether it's Yerusha or matana. So my hilchsa. So as far as what din does it make a difference whether it's a matana or a yerusha? There are lots of the nesivis, for example, asked the question on Shulchan Aruch. What is the Gemara even asking? There's lots of things where there's a difference between yerusha. So we're going to talk about that. So that's the Gemara is going to bring up, right? For example, davar shelo bal olam, or whether he can change his mind or not. So Achronim talk about various possibilities within that, why the Gemara wants to focus on one particular Nafkamina and makes it sound as though there are no others. Sovereign of Adaba Ava Kameda Rava Lamema, Rav Adaba Ava as a Talmud in front of Rava thought to explain as follows. The difference would be, Im Roy Liyoshoi, if we're saying that it's going to be considered a Yerusha, that the one he's giving to is his son among his other sons, for example, then because it's a Yerusha, Almanose Nizonis Minachosel. Then the result would be that the man who gave away, in our scenario, you have, he's giving to Reuven among all his children, the father is Yaakov. Now, Yaakov, when he passes away, his Almana, is going to be entitled to mezonos from the Yerusha. Well, if we consider it a Yerusha, then she's entitled to mezonos out of that Yerusha. It's a takanas chachamim. The im lav, but if not, if we consider it a matana, ain't a manasa nizonis minachasav, then Rav Ada va'ava thought to say that in that case the almana would not get from them because it would be nechosim mishubadim, and the Gemara and the Mishnah tells us in Gittin that an almana does not collect mizonis from nechosim mishubadim, mepnei tikuna olam. There's a number of things like that. Mizonis for the almana, mizonis for the daughters until they get married. These are called dover she'in lam kitzpah. You never know in advance how much it's going to end up being because it depends. The almana could live for 30 years and then never get remarried, and then there's a huge amount. So therefore, people who buy property are going to say, well, why should I bother buying when the almana is going to take it away from me in satisfaction of that? And therefore, we say that she can't collect from the chosim mishubadim. Well, sort of out of Ava thought to say, in that case, if we consider what the guy gave over here as a gift, then the almana, it's off limits to the almana. If he gives it as a yerusha, then fine, it's included in the takana, then an almana can collect from the yerusha that the yerushim get. That's what Abba thought to say.
But let's say she only collects from Zebudis, and then there's no Zebudis that she doesn't.
So that's a different matter. That's the Gemara talks about at the beginning of Bava Kamma, what happens, for example, if he gave, for example, in the case of Valchoyv, it talks about over there, let's say he gave away all the Beninus and kept only the Zebudis, so you can say, I left you something that you could collect from. You have various dinim that it talks about over there. The point is, in other words, we're not getting into that level of detail at this point. We're just saying that she can't collect from the chosim shabbatim, period. So actually, yeah, it doesn't matter. Even if he gave away all the ziburis and all that's left is beninus and idis, then yeah, she'll collect from those. For her, it's an upgrade anyway. Why would she mind? But yeah, anyway. The point is, so sort of Adaba Ava thought to say that would be the distinction. But Rava asks him, why niga gara? Why should her position be worse because he gave it as a matona? Hashta. Think of it, when it comes to Yerusha, which is Daraisa, and yet we're saying that the Chachamim, to a certain extent, override that Amonosin Nizonis Menachosav, and his Amona can be supported from his property, even though, to a certain extent, that overrides the Dinim of Yerusha, because it says, in other words, that what the Yerusha are getting is not going to remain exclusively theirs. They're going to have to give some of it to the Amona over the years from Mizonis. And yet we say the Amona gets it, Matana, the Rabbanon like Koshekin. So how much more so with the Matana, where the whole concept of a Matnas Shivmira is the Rabbanon, so all the more so that the daughter should be entitled, that the Amona should be entitled to it. So in other words, the Rashbam says, we learn a din from here. When we say that she can't get from the Chosim Mishabadim, that would be if he sold it to somebody else, if he gifted it to somebody else with a kinyan, etc. But when it comes to a Matnas Shchidmera, then she would be entitled to collect from him. Tosfos actually elsewhere discusses that point. Maybe there's a distinction, maybe based on this Gemara over here, we would say that if he sells it, sure, she has no right to it because the Chosim Mishabadim, but maybe if he gifts it even to somebody else, even here the Rashbam is saying, if he gives it with a kinyan and the whole nine yards, then she can't collect it from it anymore because the Chosim Mishabadim, but Tosfos elsewhere discusses, maybe not necessarily, maybe in fact, if he gives it as a gift, then based on all Gemara over here, she should be entitled to collect from him. And in fact, in the end, that's how the halacha is paskin. So Tosfos says, so maybe yes, maybe not, and Tosfos concludes, and this is the halacha, like the Rashbam says over here, any kind of matana she can't collect from, but a matna shchivmera is an exception. So therefore, that's not the naftamina between whether in our case we consider it matana or yerusha, because even if we say usually she can't collect from matana, in this case a matna shchivmera she could collect from whether we call it yerusha or matana. So we're back to the question, what was Rav Huna's point in saying that we consider it a yerusha when possible and a matana when not? So we have to find another naftamina. Ela Omar Rava, so rather Rava says that it's kiddush sholach leir of achabar of ibya. It's like a kiddusholach of Acha bar of Ivya. It's like we find that of Acha bar of Ivya sent a message with the following din: L'divrei of Yechim and Broika. following Rabbi Yochanan Breuker's opinion, that it's possible to take away the Nachla from some of the children and give it exclusively to some of the others, from some of the boys, and give it to some of the other boys, then what if he says, what about if he says, I'm giving you my Nachosa? We touched on this the other day. We're going to talk about it in more detail later on, where he says, my Nachosa are going to you, but after you die, instead of it going to you, Yoshim, I want it to go to somebody else. So then it depends. Im hoya rishon royally yoshei, if that first person he gave it to was royally yoshei, namely, for example, it was one of his sons, ein lasheni v'makom rishon klum, then the second one does not end up getting anything, even when the first one dies, because she'ein lashon matana ela lashon yerusha. Because not really a Lashon of Matana. This is not really a Lashon Isha'in Zeh, HaGoyis HaBach adds. This is not a Lashon of Matana, ever Lashon Yerusha. It's rather, it's considered a Lashon of Yerusha. The Yerusha ain't Lahefsik, and Yerusha has no end. So it goes all the way back to Reuven, to the progenitor of the Shevet, as it said earlier in the Perek. So therefore, so once he says that the Nechos Elacha, so if it's considered, if we consider it to be, if it's considered to be a Yerusha, then the Acharecha is never going to get it. Whereas if we consider it a Matana, then Matana is only to him.
But why would he have such a lesson then?
Because that's what he's saying. So that's the thing. We're saying that he's saying, I'm giving my Nechosim to you, Acharecha Leplaini, but if it's something where it would apply as a Yerusha, then it doesn't matter that he said Acharecha Leplaini.
Yeah,
we override
it. I mean, he's a shidmai.
We try to say that a person ain't know the moitzi dvar of the batala. But in this case, fine, he didn't know that concept of Yerusha ain't lahefsek or whatever, let's say. But yeah, nevertheless, that would be a nafkamina, whether we call it matana or Yerusha. Omalei Rovel Rav Nachman v'ha afsika. So Rav Nachman asks Rav Huna, fine, but how could Rav Acha Breda Rav Ivya say that? The fact is, as you just said, he was mafsik. He is trying to override and say that it should go Acha Recha Leplaini. Why are we completely ignoring what he's saying with the Acharecha? Rav Nachman answers, who suffer yesh lahefsik? Fine, exactly that. The Shchidmerat thought that he could break the chain. He could give it to his son and then have Acharecha lepoini, and he didn't realize that v'rachmana omayim lahefsik. But Hashem says there's no hefsik, so therefore he's not able to override that. It would be masnal mashakos
v'atora. Well, he says to make a child, the other child feel good.
Whatever the reason is, the point is that because the Acharecha that he's saying is not necessarily another child, it could be some stranger or whatever. But the point is that just because he said that he wants to do that doesn't mean that he has the ability to do it. He would be masnal mashakos v'atara. The Ritva brings also an explanation from the Rini Gash that what Rav Nachman means is like this. Once he gave it to this person, and it's considered a Yerusha, so it's considered as though he's trying to give away Nechosim that don't belong to him anymore. Because he just gave it to him as Yerusha B'stam. Later on, we're going to talk about these dinim of Acharecha extensively in the next parak mainly. But even there is an opinion when he says that I'm giving you and it's supposed to be Acharecha after you, it should go to somebody else. There's an opinion that says we consider it as though he said Me'achshav, that as of now, I'm giving a certain right over it to that person, such that you don't maybe have the ability to undo that, but that would only be when the whole thing is mitzad matana, not when it's mitzad Yerusha. Yerusha, once it's given, and he has no ability to override that. So here, the Rashbam is saying it's a matter of masna amasha kosva Torah. The Rini Gash is saying it's not a matter of masna amasha kosva Torah. It's poshut. He's trying to make a tenai on something that he doesn't own anymore. Once he gave it to that Yerush, then that's it. It's out of his hands to decide what should happen with it.
Masna is not really going again. So if he's giving it as Yerusha, then after he dies, he's taking it out from...
No, but that's the thing. Yerusha ain't lahefsek. Well, according to the Rashbam, the vote is once he said something which we can construe as Yerusha, then that's it. Yerusha ain't lahefsek. Therefore, he has no ability to override it. And we considered Masna Masha Kosvatara. And again, according to the Rimi Gash, it's not so much because Masna Masha Kosvatara, it's more because he poshe doesn't have the ability anymore. It's not his to give away anymore. Okay, so that would be a nafkamina whether it's mishum matana or mishum yerusha. So again, to recap, so that's what Rav Huna is saying. So if he says
So if he's saying that I want my nechosim to go to Pliny, if that Pliny is royally Yosha, then we consider it a Yerusha. Therefore, even if he says also Acharecha LePliny, we would ignore the Acharecha LePliny part. But if he says that if he's giving it to somebody who is getting it Mishum Matana, for example, a daughter among his sons or his wife instead of his children or whatever, then we say if he says Acharecha LePliny, then in fact that Acharecha would take effect because then, fine, it can be a Matana for a life gift and then after that it goes to somebody else.
A daughter is considered breaking the chain already.
Yeah, because a daughter is not getting Mishum Yerusha unless they're only daughters.
Right, if it's only daughters, that
if there's only daughters, then we're back to Rabbi Yechim and Berakah Zin.
Doesn't go to the father.
If the daughter dies while the father is alive, like we had the first case that we learned today, and she doesn't have any children or descendants of her own, then yeah, her father yarshins her. But otherwise, if she outlives her father, she's yarshining him. And if there were only daughters, like with Slachon. So therefore, if he then decides among the five daughters, among Machlo, Noya, Chogo, Milka, Vesiritza, I want to give all of it to Tirza, then fine. Rabbi Yochanan Berakah would say he's able to do that. That's considered a Yerusha. But if he were to say, I want to give it to Tirza and Acharayach, and after you die, I want it to go, whether you have children or not, I want it to go to Pliny, then that part wouldn't take effect because Yerusha ain't my answer. Yeah. Okay. Another case. A person says to somebody else who is royally Yosha, as the Gemara is going to explain, where he says, my nechosim should go to you, and after you die, I want it to go to Pliny. Vidushin, royally Yosha, Hava, that first person was royally Yosha. It was one of his sons. So the first one dies, also Sheni the Kotava. So the second one is coming and saying, listen, you know, that he said Acharecha LePliny, so I should be entitled to get it. Sovereign of Ilish Kameda Rav Lameimar, said of Ilish, as a Talmud in front of Rava, thought to say that Sheni, Solomon is Sheni Nami Shokel, that yeah, the second one would also get. He didn't realize this point that we just said that Yerusha ain't Lahefsik and he has no ability to override it. Whether because Mashna, Mashachas Vatarada, or because it's not in the first one's Rishus anymore. Amalei, so Rava tells him no. Dayoni de Chatzatzta Hochi Dayoni. Dayonim of Chatzatzta would judge that way. But it's wrong to do that. What is Chatzatzta? So the Rashbam brings two explanations. One is that Chatzatzta, Meloshim Lechitza, means like a pshara. Like where you don't know what to do, so you make a pshara. So you would do that, so you would consider it like Mamon Amutal Basafik. But the fact is, it's not like that based on what we just learned.
I can even pass it if you're not passing that.
Because after all, we had Rava's own Svara, where Rava asked Rav Nachman at the bottom of the previous Amud, V'ha Afsika, the fact is that he said, Acharecha LePliny, why are we ignoring that? So Rav Nachman had explained that the Torah says, Ein Lahefsik, and Rav Acha braided Rav Ivy had sent a message saying, in fact, that when it's Mishum Yerusha, he can't do that. Rav Ilish did not realize that point. He wasn't aware of that point. So he thought to Paskin. So first Rava is telling him, according to Rashbam's first explanation, Dayoni Dechatzatzta means Dayonim who don't know any better and therefore they always make a pshara. The second explanation, Rashbam says, is, he brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, Chatzatzta would mean a Beis HaKvaris. So judges of the Beis HaKvaris might judge such a thing, which means, Meforshim explain, it can mean, for example, like the Dayonim, it can mean like you're thinking, like I asked Rav Nachman earlier, that we should respect what the guy said before he died, and therefore we should give to the Acharecha, but no, that only if you're gonna be ignorant of the Halacha, and you're gonna follow exclusively what the guy said, even though now he's in the Beis HaKvaris, then you're gonna do that, but you should realize that's not the Halacha. Ben Yehoyada says an explanation on it that Dayoni Dechatzatzta would mean, for example, earlier in the Masechta, it talks about sometimes there would be people who were grave robbers who would dig up bodies to steal the clothes off them or whatever. So it's an obvious thing to Paskin that those people are guilty. So if that's the extent of the din that you know, then yeah, you would Paskin the way you're thinking to Paskin, but you really ought to know better. You really ought to know more advanced dinim than that.
I'm digging the rape person. That's getting for some
of the maybe not right away, whatever. There are a number of other explanations. What chatzatzta means. One explanation is that it comes from the word chotzatz, which means gravel.
Oh.
Which means gravel, like stone. So like you have a heart of stone, so you don't realize what the halacha is. So the point is, in other words, Rava is telling him that no, this is not the halacha. Lav hainu de shalach Rav Acha bar Rav Ivya. Isn't this exactly the case that Rav Acha bar Rav Ivya sent a message and said that we don't give to the Acharecha because Yerusha ain't lahefsik? Ichsif. So Rav Ilish was embarrassed that he didn't know about that. And in fact, he was worried also that Rava might say, you know what, it's a good thing that I was here because otherwise you would have passed him wrongly. So Rava says, don't worry. Rava said to him to make him feel better, as the pasuk says, Ani Hashem be'ita achishena. I, Hashem, will bring it in its time quickly. Which means, in other words, Rashban explains, when tzaddikim need to be helped, Hashem brings them the help right away on the spot. Like, they may not have expected. So the same way, in other words, I know, says Rava, that you, Hashem would help, that you, Hashem would give you siyata d'shmaya, that you wouldn't end up paskening wrongly. So Hashem deliberately made it that this case happened when I'm around in order to correct you. Had I not been around, then the Eibishter would have never brought this case, caused this case to come in front of you in the first place. So be'ita, in its proper time, when it's time for it to happen, achichena, Hashem makes it happen quickly and unexpectedly. That's one explanation. The Oruch brings an explanation that Rava means also something else. He means Rav Ilish, you're not old enough yet to realize when it comes to time, the ita, when it comes to time, when you're going to be old enough, in particular, usually a dayan is supposed to be 40 years old, then you'll have the Eibishter will give you by that time the chokhma to realize this kind of detail that you didn't know before. In fact, Ben Yehoyada says on it, the word be'ita can be divided down into be'ace hey, in the fifth time. And he says like this, you know, we haven't pirkei avos. No, then chomet. Well, maybe it means the fifth of Shulchan Aruch, but that's not what Ben Yehoyada says. He says like this: in the stages that a person goes through as far as learning Torah. So we have in Pirkei Avos, then chomet shanim mikra. So stage one is before he started learning mikra. Stage two before he started learning Mishnah. Third stage before he starts learning Gemara. Fourth stage, now we have in the Mishnah over there, we have other things, Ben Shloish Yisro the Mitzvahs, Ben Shmona Yisro the Chuppah, etc. But those are not Negeya to learning Torah. The next one that's Negeya as far as his abilities in learning Torah is Ben Arbaim Levina. So until he's 40 years old, he's in the fourth stage. After 40, he enters the fifth stage. So Rav is telling him, Be'ace Hey, and when you reach the fifth stage, when you reach 40 years old, the Eibishter will give you the Chochma and the Bina to understand how to do things. So don't worry that now you didn't know. We find there's a number of examples. We know there's the concept that a rov that a dayin or paskins the emes lamito, then he gets siyata d'shmaya for it. There's other places actually where there's a gemara in Yuma that mentions in particular Shevet Yehuda and Shevet Levi are given a bracha for that. Shevet Yisachar, we know, are the great Tamar Chachamim of the Jewish people, but it's particularly Shevet Yehuda and Levi that have the ability, lasukit shmaita, liba dehilchsa, to have the siyata d'shmaya to come up with the correct psak, even when they didn't know all the facts ahead of time. We actually find a number of cases in the gemara with Rava himself, where he was going to pask in a certain way, and his Talmidim said, wait, but isn't the din such and such? And then it turns out the circumstances were such that the halacha is that Rava's psak din is correct, which he didn't even know of those circumstances at the time. This is special siyata d'shmaya that certain chacham are giving.
Is it why Yehuda and would have had it? Yehuda and...
So why it says why the Gemara learns it from Sukkim over there, why they were dafka zoichateit, I don't know. But in any case, the Tzadik HaKoyen in the Lublin actually has an explanation in a number of places in his writing. He says Rava is from Shevet Yehuda, or at least has a ruchnistic connection with Shevet Yehuda, and therefore he, and now we're saying as Talmud, Rav Ilish, have that special siyata d'shmaya. Okay. Mishnah says, HaKosev is nechosev la'acherim. If a person writes out a document that he's giving his nechosim to others, now we've learned in these last couple of Mishnayos, he has the ability to do that. Even according to the Chachamim, against Rabbi Yechon Mebreika, when it comes to a Loshon Matana, he has the ability to do that. Yeah. And he abandons his children and doesn't give them anything. Masha also. So what he did is done. That's Rashbam points out is a milsa de pshita. It's an obvious thing we've been saying in the last couple of mishnayos. But the chiddush is the ela ein ruach chachamim noichehemenu. However, the chachamim are not pleased with a person who acts like that. One of the Forshim on Ein Yaakov says, you see in next week's parasha, even you see where Avraham was going to throw out Yishmael, where Sarah tells Avraham, throw out Yishmael, and Vayera Hadavam Oed Ve'en Avraham, that's an example of Ein Ruach Chachamim, Noichemenu. Avraham is not pleased with that until Hashem tells him this is a special case. Anyway, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, Im Lo Hayu Bonav Noigin Kashura, Rav Shimon Gamliel says, if his children were not acting properly, Zochur LaTov, then he should be remembered for good that he's doing this kind of thing. Now, is he coming to argue with the Chachamim, or is he coming to clarify what they're saying? That the Gemara is going to take up that point. There is, by the way, there is a Girsa that some of the Rishonim have, Im Ein Bonav Noigin Boy Kashura, if they don't act towards him properly. You know, Ein Noigin Kashura would mean like they went off the derech or something. Ein Noigin Boy Kashura means they're not treating him with the derech eretz that they should have for their fathers. Yeah. Anyway, so is Rav Shimon Gamliel arguing, or is he clarifying that? We're going to see now in the Gemara. There is also within that, there's a machlokas rishonim and ultimately achronim as well. Does all of this apply even if it's only if it's all of his nechosim or even if it's only some of his nechosim? The Rashbam says that even where it's miktas nechosim, even where it's only a little bit, then still the chachamim don't want that he should be giving her away to other people. On the other hand, there are Rishonim and Achronim that discuss this in some detail and say that maybe not. And maybe if he leaves over a decent amount for his children, then it's not such a problem, and even the Chachamim won't have a problem with it. Only if he takes it completely away from them. So for example, the Alter Rebbe takes that view. If he takes it completely away from them, is no good. But let's say, for example, he wants to give a large amount of his fortune to Tzedakah. We find, for example, a Gemara in Ksubas before Ma'ukva passed away. He gave away two thirds, I think it says, or half or two thirds or something of his Nechosim to Tzedakah, and that's fine. He's disinheriting that from his own children, but he's leaving them a decent amount, so therefore that's fine. Rav Moshe was once asked a shaila about such a case, similarly where a person wanted to leave most of his fortune to tzedakah and he wanted to leave his children only like $1,000, and this was, I guess, in the 1960s or something when $1,000 meant something, and Rav Moshe said that's fine. So, but you do have other. You hear the Rashbam say not, and there are achronim who also say that you shouldn't be doing that either. Anyway. So the Gemara says, "Iboylahu mi pligi rabbanan aleidet of Shimon Gamliel oloi." Do the Chachamim in our Mishnah disagree with Shimon Gamliel, where they're not noigim kashura, where they're not acting the way they should, or because they might say, "Fine, yes, those children don't deserve to inherit, but they might yet have children of their own who are going to be deserving. So why should we take it away from them? And their potential future children will be deprived. Maybe at least he should be giving it to them." So are the Chachamim disagreeing or not? So the Gemara says, Toshma, let's bring a proof from the following story. De Yosef ben Ya'ezer. Yosef ben Ya'ezer, otherwise known as Yosef ben Ya'ezer, we know him from Pirkei Avos, as he was the Nasi of the first five, of the first of the five Zugas. So we have in the middle of the time, they used to have the head of the Sanhedrin is the Av Beis Din. They used to have that that's it. And then, early in the period of the Second Beis Hamikdash, about 150 or so years after the Second Beis Hamikdash was built, they started with the concept of a Nasi. So from then on, you have a Nasi and an Av Beis Din. Historically, there's a reason behind it. Dodos HaRishonim explains at some length based on a story in Josephus that up until that point, the one who represented the Jewish people to the outside world was the Kohen Gadol. For example, he would be the one who was officially in charge of collecting taxes and things like that. It happened, and there came a point when the Kohen Gadol then was unqualified for that, and he ended up allowing Rishoyim and Misyavnim to take over. So then the Chachamim realized, you know what, we need somebody from within the Chachamim themselves to represent the Jewish people as the national leader, and so therefore they came up with the concept of Nasi. So Yosef ben Ya'ezer, as the Gemara calls him over here, was the first Nasi in that system. Anyway, he had a son who was not acting properly, who went off the derech. In those times, this is Yosef ben Ya'ezer lived in the period before the story of Hanukkah. So the Misyavnim were gaining quite a bit of ground. Whether the son went as far as becoming a Misyavn, the Gemara doesn't say, but in any case, maybe he was at least influenced by them. Havalei Elisa de Dinri. Now Yosef ben Ya'ezer had an Elisa full of gold coins, full of gold dinner coins. Now Elisa, on the face of it, means an attic. So like he had a second floor of his house that was full of such gold coins. However, Tosfa says, if you say that, it would be kind of a guzma, especially because the Gemara is going to talk about later on in the story 13 such Elisas. Rather, Tosfa says the word Elisa can mean a keli, like a ladle that you use to ladle out wine or oil. So in that case, then to have one ladle full of that. I mean, it's money, but it's not. We're not talking about he wasn't filthy rich. Yeah. Anyway. So he didn't want that his son should get it. The son was not noy kashura. Kom akdusha. So he went and was makdush it he went and donated it to the treasury of the Beis Hamikdash. Well, eventually, this son, Ozol Nosiv Vas Godor Klivid Yane Malka, this son later on went and married the daughter of somebody who wove crowns for Yane Hamela. Crowns in those times, first of all, they could be made out of gold and silver, and in that case, weaving them would mean making them, but sometimes also like they would wear crowns of leaves or whatever, and you had an expert who would make such crowns. So in other words, this guy has a position in the government, and his daughter, and Yosef ben Ya'ezer's son married this guy's daughter. Whether it actually means whether she was Jewish, sure, but the truth is Yanai HaMelech lived a couple of decades after the whole story of Hanukkah. So not necessarily in this and in some other Gemaras, not necessarily does Yanai HaMelech literally mean the actual historical Yanai HaMelech. It can just be a way of saying somebody like a very highly placed whoever was in charge of the government at that time in the period before Hanukkah. There were various Messiavim involved over there. So it could be that it means such a person's daughter. Whatever the case, anyway. Ben Yehoyada points out that it's Ashgacha Pratis, and the reason why the Gemara makes a point of mentioning what her father did for a living is because further on in the story, when we have that he finds a jewel and his wife tells him to give it to the Bais HaMikdash, if she didn't know how rapacious the Goyim are and the Misyavnim or whatever, as far as riches, as far as diamonds, she would have told him, take it to them and sell it to them. But she realizes what kind of people they are, and if he offers them a diamond for sale, they're going to force him to sell it at a low price. So that's why the story developed as it did. His wife gave birth to a baby. Zovin the son of Yosef ben Yehuda,
married
this daughter of the guy who makes crowns for Yanai HaMelech. Now his wife, so now this is Yosef ben Yehuda's daughter-in-law, had a baby. Zovin Labanissa, so her husband Yosef ben Yehuda's son went to buy a fish for her to eat after she had the baby. Korah, he opened up the fish, Ashkel Magalissa, and he found a diamond or a pearl or whatever, a precious stone in it.
She found it, right?
He found it when he was cutting up the fish.
The husband,
when he was cutting up the fish to cook.
No good then.
Yeah. Omrele, so his wife tells him, Loi Tinti Elamalka, don't take it to the king's palace. The obvious thing would say you have a jewel like that, bring it to the king's palace. They're going to want to buy it from you. Don't do that, she says. They're going to force you to sell it to them at a very low price, much less than it's worth. So that's what I'm saying. Ben Yehoyada says this is why it's important for us to know that her father worked for the government. Now, therefore, she knows how these people operate, and therefore she's able to give him this advice. So instead, she says, Vil Amthi Lagabi Gizbori, go bring it to the Gizborim of the Bais HaMikdash. And they can buy it from you. They can use it for the stones of the ephod. They can use it for the stones of the ephod or the choshen. Or if they don't need it for that, then they could sell it to somebody else. Whatever. Anyway. And she continues. V'loy t'shayme at. Now, when you go to the gizborim, don't tell them I think it's worth X amount, and therefore I want you to give me that amount of money, because the problem with that be, da'am yurosi l'gavoya kim sirosi l'hedya. So even though she may have been the daughter of this guy who makes crowns for the government, and he's maybe a half Messiah himself, she knew the halacha, that when a person says to hektish, I'm going to do such and such, it's considered, it has the strength of when you give something over as a kinyan to something else, to somebody else. So in other words, the same way as, for example, if I tell you I'm going to give you $100, that's scam words. If I make a kinyan that I'm going to give you $100, then I have to give it to you. And for that matter, also, as we've learned earlier in the Masechta, about all the dinim of kinyanim as far as buying and selling. Well, if you're a gizbar of Hektish, and I say I'm going to give $100 to Hektish, then I'm on the hook to give it. Either with no kinyan, no nothing, but the very fact that I said it to Hektish itself counts. So she's telling him, if you, for example, if you're going to tell them, if you make them an offer, then you're going to be bound to it, even if it turns out it's worth a lot more. So if you know how to learn, yeah. Tosfos actually draws a distinction between if he didn't actually say that he's going to give an amount to Hektish, they were working out the business deal, and before they worked it out, then the prices went up. Then he has the right to charge the higher price. But here, if he actually says something, then it would be different. So she tells him, Ela l'shaymor inhu. So rather go to the gizbarim of the Bais HaMikdash and have them figure out the value and tell you, and then you can decide whether to accept the deal or not. Amtiyase brought it to the Gizbarim. Shamor betleistra Eliyasa de Dinri. They evaluated that it's worth 13 Elias of Dinrim. So again, if Elias means upper floors of a house, then it means it's an enormous amount of money. 13 times what Yosef ben Yehuda himself had and given to Hektish. If it means, as Tosfos says, a little ladle or something like that, that you use a dipper, that you use to ladle out wine or oil, then it's a far smaller amount, but still 13 times as much as Yosef ben Yehuda had. Amrile, but they told him, Sheva Ika. Right now we have in the treasury of the Bais HaMikdash seven such Elisa of gold coins. Shisleka, but we're missing the other six. So Omru Lahu. So he tells them, fine, Sheva Havoli, give me the seven that you have. Shis, as far as the remaining six, Adayin Mukdashas L'Shamayim, then I'm donating them back to Hekdash. So you want us to give me all 13, just give me the seven that you have.
And you'll have
everything. And you'll take the diamond, and in addition, and you'll have everything. Well, not you'll have everything. You'll have to empty out the treasury of the Bais HaMikdash to give me my seven, but at least you want us to go and raise money for the other six. So Omdu V'Kosvu, so the Chachamim, who were in charge of writing down the accounts of the Bais HaMikdash, wrote down the following. They said, Yosef ben Yezer, Hichnis Achas, Yosef ben Yezer brought in one Elisa of gold coins into the Bais HaMikdash, Uvnoi Hichnis Shesh, and his son brought in six. So they're writing in praise of his son. Here, Yosef ben Yezer thought the son is a no good nick. And look at this, it turns out that he gave to the Bais HaMikdash six times as much as his father did. One point is, the Ritva makes an interesting point over here. There's a halacha that says that we should be mitzvah l'farisim oisim mitzvah, that Ashba brings in a tshuva, that when a person does a mitzvah, usually we say, I mean, a person shouldn't be priding himself on his mitzvah, so he gets his schar lost in love, he shouldn't be looking to make a big to-do of it, but sometimes it's appropriate to in order to induce other people to follow his example. So this is an example of that, that we'll be writing down that b'noi hichnesheish, and this will give other people the idea, you know what, if he could do it, we could do it also, and we should be donating to Hekdash. Anyway, so the Ikadamri, now another version is that they wrote like this. So according to that first version, they wrote L'Shvach. Look at this. Yosef and Ezra gave one Elisa to the Bais HaMikdash, and his son exceeded him six times over. The Ikadamri, but others say that they wrote in a negative way. Yosef and Ezra, Hichnis Achas of No Hotzi Shefa. They're saying Yosef and Yezer brought in one Elisa de Dinri. His son took out seven. Meaning, in other words, you know why he didn't? You know why he left the other six? Because they weren't available. Fine, he doesn't want to accept an IOU from the Bais HaMikdash. But he took whatever was available. And if they had had eight, he would have taken eight. And if they had had 13, he would have taken 13. So then, according to that, it comes out that he did wrongly. So, in other words, so let's see. Mid ka'amri hichnis in the first version, because they're saying that he brought in six times as much as his father did, Miklal the Shaper Oban. That seems to imply that they're praising him for what he did. So therefore, so we see that it's a good thing that the father had done this in the first place to say, because his son wasn't Noy Kashura, to take away the Nachla from him, and you see what good effects came from it later on, that his son gave six times as much. So that would show that the Chachamim are saying, like Reb Shimon Gamliel, the Mishnah, yes, when the son is not Noy Kashura, don't give him the Nachla, give it to somebody else, for example, to Hekdash, and good things may come from it in the future. But the Gemara says, Adarabba, but you could say the other way around, Midkami Hoitzi, on the second version, where they're saying he took out seven, and they're criticizing him for that, like he took out everything that was available, well, that implies that maybe Yosef ben Yezer, to begin with, did not do the right thing by taking it away, because he did the wrong thing, and the result was, many years later, that his son also did the wrong thing. So in that case, it would mean that the Chacham are disagreeing with Rav Shimon Gamliel. He shouldn't have taken it away from him. He should have given it to him. He's not Noy Gashura. But you see, Minash HaMayim, it came about as a result of him doing the wrong thing that his son later on did even more wrong. So the Moses says, you're right. You can't really prove from this story one way or the other. It's true you have the two different versions of what they wrote. So therefore, we can't really prove one way or the other. Now, Achronim deal actually with the question. So what's bothering the Gemara so much? So let's say very simple that Reb Shimon Gamliel says one way, the Chachamim say the other way. Maybe very simple. The two versions in the Braisa reflect the opinion of Reb Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim respectively. So Reb Moshe has actually an interesting discussion of this Gemara in the middle of a Tshuva, as he's dealing with a Tshuva about various dinim of Meiser and then Hamvazvaz, Ayvazvaz, Yosef Mechoymish, and other such things. So by the way, he takes some time to explain our Gemara. So he explains like this. Listen, when we're saying that the son of Yosef ben Yezer, we're saying that he said, I'm going to take only seven, I'm going to leave you the other six. Why should they be criticizing him anyway? Is he required to give away half his money that he could get to Hekdash?
He could have gone to the king's palace,
the king's palace might have bought it from him for less, but whatever, the point is, so why are we saying there's any criticism in the first place? So rather, the Moshe explains like this. The two different versions, whether it was the Shvach or the Gnai, the Ikad Amri, is like this. You could say that you could say it was a, you could say that his father had done the right thing and punished him by taking away his Yerusha, and the result of it was that, and he actually accepted that, and he accepted that. So, so now he's saying, you know what? I realize that Taka wasn't acting wrongly. Now, from now on, I'm going to do better. So in that case, it comes out that Yosef ben Ezer did a very good thing by denying him the Nachla, because it came out from it that his son Taka, that Taka did tshuva and did the right thing. Or you could say that maybe not. You could say that that maybe he didn't accept that oynish. That maybe he's saying, you know what? My father did something that he shouldn't have done, and he took away the inheritance from me, and I'm going to do whatever I can to undo that. So therefore, so we'll say, so in that case, we're saying that what Yosef ben Ezer did kind of backfired. So we could say, so we could say either way. We could say, in other words, that's a gnai for the son. So we could say that it's a gnai for the son, that he's not paying attention. My father tried to disinherit me. I should realize that I should shape up. You could say it's a gnai on him, that no, he's saying, I don't care. I'm going to try to undo that as much as possible. But Yosef ben Ezer did properly. Or we could say that no. We could say that Yosef ben Ezer shouldn't have done in that way, Reb Moshe is explaining like this. Either way, we can say that the son didn't really accept that toichacha, and the result was that he did something improper. One way of looking at it is Yosef ben Ezer did whatever he could. He did the right thing. But his son didn't accept that toichacha, and he ends up trying to undo it by taking whatever he can from Hekdesh. Or you could say, Ikadamri, that you could say, no, Yosef ben Ezer shouldn't have done this in the first place, and therefore Hashem brought about these circumstances to demonstrate that Yosef ben Ezer had done wrongly, and that therefore his son gets so much inheritance instead, that he takes seven full elusas out of the Bais HaMikdash. So the Moshe says that's another way of explaining the Gemara over here. So the two different versions, they are arguing whether this is the right thing to do or not, but not that they're arguing whether the son did the right thing. Either way, the son didn't act rightly, but the question is, does that demonstrate Yosef ben Ezer at least tried to do the right thing? Unfortunately, his son wasn't receptive to it, or did he do the wrong thing and Hashem made it min hashamayim, that the result was that his son was in a position to undo it?
My little brain says that they both did well. The Haraya, Hashem made him find the jewel in the fish. It could have gone to Yachan Yankov.
Yes, but you could say, in other words, that the point of that is now that's undoing what Yosef ben Ezer tried to do. It could mean that the son did tshuva to that extent, but it could also mean, in other words, that the Eibishter made that what Yosef ben Ezer did, Hashem is showing, after all, you shouldn't have done that, and the result is, I'm going to make it that your son is going to be in position to empty the treasury of the Bais HaMikdash.
Okay, but it wasn't really empty. He gave something which is covering the...
Yeah, but nevertheless, they don't have... Fine.
At the Mishnah at the end, he did Karoi.
That's the point of Shimon Gamliel. That was the question, whether Chum agree with that or not. Yeah.
Okay,
so we don't have a proof from this story one way or the other. But Toshma, so the Gemara says, my Havi Allah, what's the bottom line? So what is the din? Toshma, we can prove from the following. The Omele Shmuel of Yehuda. Shinina, sharp one, as we have throughout Shas, we call him Shinina, loy tehevi be'avuri achsanta, you should never be involved in a case where the father is taking away the nachla from the one who's supposed to inherit him, or even v'afilim b'ra bishul l'bra tova, even from a bad son to a good son, and even if he's not taking away completely from the bad son, he's just minimizing his inheritance, you as a dayan should not be involved in a case, in writing documents or whatever to make that happen. The Choshekin, Nibra Lebrata, all the more so to go from a son to a daughter, because again, you never know from whom there's going to come out good children. So even the son may be an out and out Russia, but nevertheless, you never know who might come from him. A better quality, the Gemara elsewhere has the expression about it based on a pasuk, Yochin Russia, but Tzadik Yobosh. The Russia may have prepared a whole amount of wealth, and the purpose is that the Tzadik who descends from him is eventually going to wear that clothing. So the same way, so Shmuel is telling Rav Yehuda, even if one of the children is not acting properly, it's really best that the father shouldn't disinherit him in favor of another one, and you shouldn't get involved in that. So therefore we see that the Chachamim do in fact disagree with Rav Shimon Gamliel, and Shmuel is paskening like them. The Rashbam says, don't we usually say the halacha is like Rav Shimon Gamliel whenever he says something in the Mishnah? Fine. That's Rav Yochanan says that in the Gemara in a few places. Shmuel can disagree with Rav Yochanan on that. Besides which, anyway, the Rashbam says, anyway, all these rules have exceptions. So even if we say the halacha is usually like Rav Shimon Gamliel in the Mishnah, this could be one of the exceptions. Now, again, you have a machlokas rishonim and a machlokas acharonim. What about if he's not taking away all the Yerusha from them, only some of it? Would that be valid? And would that be something that the Chachamim approve of, the Alter Rebbe, and for example, says yes, the Chassam Sofer discusses it and says maybe not necessarily, maybe not even in that case. In any case, we're going to continue tomorrow, Bez Hashem, with more about this, about taking away a nachla from one child to give to somebody else or whatever, and we're going to discuss more about that. More stories and more genuine about that.